Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Shop Talk Show. We have two awesome sponsors this week. Environments for Humans, our longtime sponsor, have announced their speakers for the CSS DevConf. So go to CSSDevConf.com. It will redirect you to the 2013 subdomain there. It's coming up this October 21st through 23rd, and you can see the whole speaker list, and we'll share some of that later in the show. And BlendConf, it's a little bit earlier, coming up in Charlotte, North Carolina, September 5th through 7th, which is also a big, fancy, awesome, design and all web kind of oriented thing. We'll tell you more about both of them later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Welcome to the Shop Talk Show, the podcastist with the mostest about front end.
You just made that
mixing
up.
Mixing it up, man. 2013 style. I'm twerking it. I'm Dave Rupert. With me is Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody. And with us this week is Jerry Cody. Thanks. I was just going to go, hello, Jerry.
I haven't heard that one before.
See what I did there?
Thanks for having me.
Sure. That's Jerry's Twitter handle and dribble thing and everywhere thing, I think.
Yep. It's pretty consistent now. Yes. HelloJerry.com.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. I do that same thing, but mine's just my name, but I'm like, it's going to be my website and my Twitter and I'm going to use the same thing everywhere. So it's not confusing.
Exactly. It's good branding. Yeah.
Not me, man. I mix it up. I drop a letter here and there. It's good.
St. John's, Newfoundland.
Yes.
Which we just learned, if you've never heard of this, people, which I bet only a fraction of you have, that it's like a half an hour time zone different thing. Did you even know you could do that? It's normally time zones are an hour.
It's pretty cool because we get to basically see midnight showings of movies before everybody else in North America. Which is really cool if you're really nerdy and you want to go see some midnight showing.
So you're where like all the like Transformers spoilers should come from.
Pretty much. Yeah. If I ever decided to go to a midnight showing, which is not really my thing because I'm usually asleep.
It would have to be like Snakes on a Plane too.
Pretty much, yeah. Or Star Wars.
Nice.
Yeah, I would definitely do that.
So Jerry's an illustrator, designer, accessibility. Have quite a few hats that you wear.
Yeah.
And is it independent? You work for yourself?
I do now. I do since early March this year. And before that, I was working for an agency for almost 5 years. But
Wow.
Yeah, I decided it was time for me to move on and do my own thing. Because I like to do freelance then too, obviously. As you do, you try to work kind of two jobs. But it was getting to be too much. So one day I just went to work and I handed him my letter. And I was like, I have to do it now.
Did you have to write a letter? Did you handwrite it?
No, I didn't handwrite it. I just wrote it.
Curious, because you're an illustrator, you know. I could see writing like an illustrated "I gotta go" letter.
That would be pretty. That'd be pretty epic, I think. But no, it was. You know, it was time. It was good. Yeah, they were great. Yeah. They're great people, and I'm still friends with them, and everything is really good. But sometimes, you know, you just know when you need to go do your own thing. And
oh yeah, absolutely. 5 years is longer than most people put in at your average.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
I think the average is like 6 months based on some friends I have.
It's amazing how people switch around. So you're hireable, possibly. I see the hire me button is enabled on Dribbble. Is that,
yes.
You know, so if you're the right person, there's some chance.
From like October onwards, I'm pretty booked up until then. But yeah, it's going really well, which in a way kind of makes me wish I'd done it a little bit sooner. But not really, because you know when it's time, and it was the right time for me. If I did it any earlier, I may not have been as prepared or whatever. So, and I think it's important to kind of be prepared. I mean, you can just kind of quit on a whim, but if you don't have anything lined up, that's really scary.
Absolutely, that's a huge question that we get regularly, and maybe it'll come up even later again in the show, is that like I'm interested in taking that step and I'm nervous about it. And I think it's such a common question because it literally is kind of scary.
It is,
right?
It is, for sure. I mean,
you just lived it. How long ago did you live it? Was it less than a year ago?
Yeah, it was I made the decision back in February and I left in March. So I've been freelancing for a few months now, but I kind of knew, like, you kind of know, like, when you start.
There'll be enough people to hire me and give me money that will
Yeah, exactly. And I think before that, if you feel like you're really, really worried. But then again, it's also good, I think, to ask people who you've worked with and what they think. Because sometimes you could think, well, nobody's going to hire me. You kind of feel that way about yourself. You're like, nobody's going to give me work. Why would they come to me when they could go to somebody else? And then you kind of to doubt yourself and doubt your abilities, and then you kind of lose confidence, and then you don't actually make any effort to quit or do something else. And it's really important to like be able to step back and realize, you know,
it's amazing to me that even you feel this way when I look through the work that you've put out and stuff. And I'm like, how could she ever possibly doubt herself? It's amazing.
I think everybody kind of feels that way, though. It's like I read an article yesterday about the that whole imposter syndrome thing, mm-hmm. where you feel like you don't have the ability to think about your own accomplishments, but you just always constantly compare yourself to other people. Mm. Which is not a good idea, but I think everybody does it.
Yeah, surely to some degree.
Yeah, so...
But you powered through, persevered, did it, took the leap.
Exactly. And it's all
good.
Really glad. Very, very glad I did.
And you wrote a book.
I did.
That I actually bought, so I gave you £2.
Nice, thank you. £2.
But is that how much it is? It is. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, they're pocket guides, which is really good because you don't have to spend a lot of money and you can kind of get through it in an hour, a couple of hours, depending mm-hmm. on which one. Mine is, I think, one of the longer books in the series, but it still comes in at like 89 pages or something.
It's like under 100 pages and it's just on one topic. You are color accessibility, color with a U, which is really... I don't know how I feel about that.
Hot drama.
It's a British publisher.
Yeah. So color accessibility, which has nothing to do with color accessibility here in America. But that was, is that a topic you're passionate about, or were you just kind of like, hey, I know about that? Or
I'm definitely passionate about it, especially just doing so much research about color, and I've been doing a lot of talks about color in general for the past year and a half or so. But color accessibility really kind of stood out for me because I didn't realize how many people out there are actually colorblind. And I don't mean like completely colorblind, but even to a degree, especially men. And
you can have it in different ways.
That's fascinating.
Too, right?
Yeah. There's numerous ways and everybody's different, so that really made me sit back and think like, wow, like we don't really think about that. And for some people it can be pretty bad. I actually know of at least 5 or 6 colorblind designers or developers, which is crazy for me to think about because I'm not, and I can't imagine designing and being colorblind, but it happens.
And they probably use color, right? Even though they are colorblind.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. I do the accessibility project, and one of the guys who helps me do that, Dennis Gable, he is colorblind, and he's just like, that's part of the reason he got involved, because he's just like, dude, it's crazy. You get somewhere and it's like, they set it like whatever, red text on a green background. Yeah. And he's just like, psh,
which would result in just inability to even see it at all. Right. So yeah. I mean, can we cover like what an example or two of what, like if let's say you're red, green colorblind, or pick a different one, if it's more relevant, that a web design could do that would really be dropping the ball on.
Yeah. Reds and greens are definitely some colors that can cause problems, especially reds. So this is actually an example I use quite a bit. When I was working on the Responsive Images Community Group website, we had mm-hmm. some red links in paragraphs of black text. So for us, who were actually designing it, it looked completely fine. But if a colorblind person who has problems discriminating between red and green colors, it's not even so much the color, but it's also the contrast, because the red can end up looking gray, which then blends into the text. So you actually could not see the red link contained in that paragraph of text.
Hmm.
So it's something that you don't really think about.
A little bit of a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it could be a simple fix like adding an underline to the link. But again, you can't really add an underline on a hover state, because then you actually have to search for the link. You don't know the link is there to begin with. So that's an example that I use quite a bit.
That's a good one. So can we extrapolate that and to say that pretty much all links need to have some kind of visual signifier other than color?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's kind of like the best practice, is like links need to somehow look like links or whatever.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, you can have color for sure, but if you don't have another type of indicator, and that could be for links, that could also be for designing infographics and charts, legends and keys and stuff, all that kind of stuff, you really need to have more than just color, because it can be really confusing.
So context could be one of those things.
Context is definitely, context is definitely one of those things, because if you have, I don't know, if you've got a navigation menu, I mean, you can kind of, you know, it's kind of a navigation menu,
right. So you wouldn't need links there, but if it's a link in the middle of a paragraph, there's
And then in that that really made us step back, and we were like, okay, we definitely need to fix that, because we didn't have a navigation. We didn't need it. All of our links, it was just a single page website, so we really needed to change it. But I mean, that was a really simple fix. So,
yeah, good. When what was the fix ended up being, underlines or bottom
borders? Yeah, we just put some underlines in. It was totally fine.
Well, you know, I can just, it's highly relevant, because I can just go to my own site, CSSTricks.com, and fail, you know? Dang it.
It's like, no.
But I mean, it's a one line fix. Fortunately, I know a little something about CSS, and I can get this wrapped up.
You know, a guy.
I happen to have commit access to that site.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, I just, as a third party recommender, I would say everyone should probably go out and buy that Jerry's book, because it's like £2, $3.10.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap. It's not going to break the bank. It's like cheaper than a cup of decent coffee.
I got a deal on, it was Global Accessibility Day, which happened a while back, and this guy was selling his book for either $1 or $10 or something. But it was like all about, it's basically like WCAG 2 in 100 pages or something like that. Just basically like explaining everything about it.
Right.
It's awesome. It's like these little isolated single focus topics are sweet.
It's just easy to actually pick up and read it and finish it in a sitting or two. You know, it's not like you have to keep, it's not a chore. Well, I hope it's not a chore anyway. I tried to make it, you know, an enjoyable read, but all the other books in that series are great too. They're just
it's quite the trend. So they do a lot of those. Yeah. And then, you know, Book Apart does the shorties, and they're not the only ones. It's good. You know, I don't know. I guess we could call it a trend, but more maybe we could just call it a good idea.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
This good idea. I got that's going on
Kickstarter one time, you know, it was a year ago or something, but I only got them in the last few months, where there was a project for the accessibility of voting ballots, and it was pretty cool. Yeah. And they ended up looking a lot like a Five Simple Steps pocket guide. It was a little, you know, saddle stitched.
Yeah, I've seen those. Those are very cool.
Yeah, and they turned out just great. And, you know, they're so cheap that you can buy them and, like, send them to your own, you know, if you can manage to find the address of somebody who has that kind of authority and care in your area. But, I mean, really well put together things on, you know, how you should write a sentence on a ballot so that it makes sense, you know, and they'll have this sentence that's really terrible. Like, if you make a mistake or accidentally use your pencil to make a mark somewhere you shouldn't have on here, please go up to the front of the place and ask for a new ballot or something. And, you know, and then the rewritten sentence was like, did you make a mistake? Go get a new ballot from the front or something, you know, it's like,
right. Yeah.
8 words instead of 50. And you're like, yes, please spread the word on that. Anyway, tangent.
Yeah. No, it's not much of a tangent. I actually really hope, my biggest hope is that the books eventually will maybe make their way into print. Because right now they are just EPUBs and PDFs, which are great. But they would look so cool if they were printed. So if you guys want to go see them printed, go ask.
I actually kind of thought it was printed. Yeah, we should. Let's
looks like
them.
It.
Yeah,
because
I mean, and literally it says pocket guide, so.
Yeah, but it would be really cool if they were printed someday.
Cool. Let's make it happen.
Intent.
People.
Intent. I could print it out on my printer right now.
I actually wanted to do that.
From me.
Let's see what could be a call to action, right?
I wanted to do that. I wanted to print my own book just to have it. It'd be very
that,
cool.
Like that bookshelf of your books thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm feeling that. Well, cool.
Discussions. support.fivesimplesteps.com/discussions. I'm gonna try to. I'll start a thread on it, and I'll post in the show notes so everybody can plus one the thread.
Chris is working.
They're going
it.
To hate me.
Chris is leveraging his API into the cloud right now.
No, now I feel guilty. I don't want to make. Listen, Jerry said that she. No, I won't.
Tell Hello, you. Jerry told me to tell you.
I'm going to be in trouble.
We have a couple of quick hot drama things that we'll just cover them quickly, just because I feel like I'm enjoying talking about color more than I'm going to enjoy talking about these things. But it's classic to shop talk.
Okay, so here we go. I due diligence. Let's do a second. All right, number one, and this was sent in to us. So again, I feel like a disclaimer should appear here that we don't read every word in these blog posts, and we are super malinformed. So number one is about woo themes. There was some drama kicked up. A blog post called A Sustainable Woo Themes came out. And kind of the crux of the drama is they changed their pricing structure entirely. Like, everything's more money.
It was a pretty baller move. Yeah, they said, hey, listen, guys, we're a business. We sell WordPress themes, and we want to keep doing this forever, and we feel like we've been doing a good job. So across the board, prices are going up.
And you know, Woo Themes, they make some of the most impressive plugins out there, you know, WooCommerce and stuff like that. But one of the big things is, like, they now do, like, per sites, I think, and like there's different tiers and I think, cause it used to be like you paid $20, you got this plugin forever and mm-hmm. like, and, but they were broke it down and they did the math and they're like, well, every time you have a problem and file an issue that costs us $25. So right after we sold it to you, we are now negative $5 into this and you made whatever $3,000 on your WordPress site or whatever. But we are negative $5. So so they kind of had this whole, we have to change everything. And now your plugins only work are limited to a certain amount of support and a certain amount of licenses and stuff like that. So I don't know. What do you guys think? Is this good, bad?
I feel like the points that were made that like unlimited went away and people were said, well, hey, I bought this based on the fact that it was unlimited. Now you took this away from me. I think that was the more of the pitchforks came out for that more than anything else.
I don't see how you can like justify that. You know, I don't know. Does that like, I don't know. I mean, if you bought something unlimited, it's unlimited, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I heard a little bit about it. I mean, I guess you, as a business, if you're going to promise that to people, you kind of have to be sure that you can deliver it. But at the same time, business things happen that are kind of beyond your control. And I don't know. I don't really use them. So I don't really have too much of an opinion about it. But if they felt it's something they needed to do, I think I read something about it being covered in their terms of service that they were allowed to change it. So, but I don't know. I think again, it is just the people who were expecting to have it and forever, and then now they don't. So
yeah, I mean, I think if you love it and like WordPress is making you a bunch of money, which it should be. It's a free software where you buy like $100 worth of plugins and you've got this really awesome website for your client. Like, that you, I hope you would sell that website for more than $100. But, I just kind of like, I think if these plugins are a value, you should just give them more money. I don't know. That's my thing.
Yeah. I can't even open my mouth. Realm. I feel like I need to stay away from this one. The 10-foot pole.
All right.
I don't know why.
Stay
I'm just
out of
nervous.
The drama, Chris.
Yep. I'm abstaining.
All right. Whoa.
Oh my.
Next bit of drama comes from the world of web security. Chrome, it got out on a Hacker News thing, I think, that Chrome saves your browser passwords like basically in plain text.
It's insane. I checked it myself. It's true.
So if you go to Chrome //
settings or something,
settings/passwords, you get a list of all your passwords that all you have to do is just click show. So you can basically like, you could, if you got access to my computer, you could be in my Facebook, which you could probably anyway, but like you have access to my Facebook password or whatever. So very interesting.
How would they fix it? Should there be a master password that you have to type in order to see them? Would that fix this whole problem?
That would make sense. That would probably make sense. Wouldn't it? I went in and I had a look and I couldn't believe it because it actually is show password and it will just reveal it.
Yeah. I mean, I think
very weird.
Safari, they tie into the like system keychain. So they have a master password that you have to use to unlock. Firefox, I believe. You know what? Somebody in the chat room said Firefox does it too. But anyway, I thought Firefox was something different. But this is just very interesting to me. In Chrome, kind of a dude replied in a Hacker News thread, which pro tip to any any company, never reply in a Hacker News thread. But it's basically just like they are like, it's all security theater anyway. It doesn't even matter. Basically,
but it doesn't matter. I don't know. It's this also feels weird to me because I just feel like I don't have the complete story, and my mind doesn't immediately go, "Oh my God, Chrome, you're the worst people ever." It just seems like that's not where my mind goes on this. But I don't know. Perhaps it should. Perhaps I'm too lax about this kind of thing. I don't know. I think of, you know, when you guys ever use Coda. And you like save your, like you put FTP information for your site in there and then you save the password. It comes for whatever reason. Regularly, I'm like, I need the FTP password for some site I haven't like messed with in a while. And I'll go into Coda to try to get it and it just won't give it to you. You know, like they're saved as little dots and there's no way to like extract a password from that once you've saved it in there. So maybe that could be a model too, is like it saves your passwords for you, but that's it. It just saves them. You can't ever just see it in plain text. That could be a way to go too.
Yeah. That's what's weird. Bradley Mech in the chat room saying, like, it needs to be sent over in plain text at some point over the wire. But that could also be, I don't know. If there's some SSL handshake there, that's a little better, I guess. But
just mean it still could be visually obfuscated somehow.
And Zach Leatherman is saying, which is not his real last name. That's like his made-up power last name. Is saying, like, it doesn't matter. It's like the password saved in DevTools. Like, if you went to Facebook, you could see the password in DevTools or something. So, hey-o, man, just when you thought it was all secure.
I would think that Chrome would make a statement about this, but I think they generally kind of opt out of, you know, of making global statements like this. I had one recently where somebody made a little proof of concept page. You know, Chrome has autofill, too. And I might as well say it because I feel like I don't think this has ever been addressed publicly, is that you can like have just an email input field or something on a page and then have a bunch of other input fields for your address and phone number and who knows what all, and like kick them off the page with some position absolute or something. And then you type the email in there and like hit tab or whatever, and it will pre-fill those hidden ones too. So you could go to a website and be like, here's my email address. I'm willing to give you just that. And theoretically, it could be exploited such that they're actually extracting much more information from you via autofill. Mm.
Everybody's going to do that now that you've said it.
I'm totally doing it. I'm doing it right
That's
now.
Real.
When you guys logged into shoptalk.com, really, it's like password sniffer JS was firing.
I just don't understand that as a complete. I'm not here to like yell at Chrome or say it's a big, because there's a lot of threads with, you know, software is complicated. And, you know, it sounds a little gross, but maybe it's not a big deal because you put this public information in your browser in which to be pre-filled. So I just don't understand all the ins and outs of it. So I'm not holding a pitchfork here. I'm just mentioning that that's a thing.
I think what was shocking was just somebody pointed this out and they were just like, yeah, whatever, won't fix, you know, and like the guy's like, but I see my passwords in my browser, you know, anyone could find these. This is ridiculous. Anyway, all right,
enough.
I'll wrap that
Let's
up
talk
there.
About-
Great job.
There you go. All right. Should we do a sponsor? It's the half hour.
Is it? Oh, just cruising along here. Very well. Let's do BlendConf. Go to blendconf.com. This is a first year conference. It's the first time you ever run it. If you want to be like, get in on the ground floor of what is sure to be a long running, beautiful thing and, you know, be famous essentially at a new conference, go to BlendConf. It's Charlotte, North Carolina. September 5th through 7th, Berman Painter's coming out. We got to get him on the show. I'm sure a lot of you are aware of him for all of his great work and speaking and stuff that he's done. It's 3 days, so the 5th, 6th, and 7th. Three tracks on all of those days for a total of 40 talks. So the big advantage to that is, you know, you could send a whole team of people down there and get good coverage. Or if you're just going by yourself, the chances of you being able to, you know, pick something at any given time of the day that is highly interesting to you is very high. 50 different speakers. It's just going to be a big, giant, awesome thing in Charlotte, North Carolina. So 20% off if you decide to go, which you should, use coupon code SHOPTALK when you're checking out for 25% off. So
it's going to be a good conference.
You could just go to the website and check it out if you wanted to, too. If you like hexagons, because there's a bunch of hexagons.
I like hexagons.
All right, there we go.
Excellent!
Yay! Let's move into the question and answer part of Shop Talk. It's the best part of Shop Talk. Eric Servin Eden, I believe it's a hyphenated last name, wrote in and said, I have noticed that when I work on my Mac, my color scheme can look good on the Mac display, but poopy on my external Samsung monitor or the PC at work. Very descriptive. Are there any particular hues or shades of color or colors that are particularly inaccessible or render unfaithfully? Also, how does this affect color accessibility? Jerry, we thought since you're kind of the pro here, do you have any experience in this area?
Yeah, there's just a few things that you can sort of do, but I mean, ultimately, it's going to depend on which monitor you're using, and especially if you're doing stuff for the web. It's kind of the same way, like how we don't know what somebody's screen size is going to be. We don't know how their monitor is going to be calibrated. We don't know what the environment of where they're sitting is. The colors can change. Also, I've noticed a lot of drastic issues with monitors that are high definition, and those can be a real pain. So I'm not sure if he's talking about that in particular, but some colors can be super oversaturated on monitors like that, especially in web browsers. But really, there isn't a whole lot you can do. If the monitors are giving you problems yourself, like kind of the way that he seems to be describing, he can just try calibrating the monitor. And it's something that you may have to do more than once. Like, you just don't calibrate your monitor and that's it. You could do it once a month. You can kind of keep it updated because things change. You could move your computer. Lighting can change.
Mm-hmm. Calibration really has to do with, like, comparing something physical, though, to a monitor, right? Or is it just more
not
generally?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily. I mean, it can change because, like, the way that colors are displayed on your monitor, they can also vary. Like, say you're sitting in a room and your room is painted red. That can really affect how you see the color on your screen. So mm-hmm. if you calibrate your monitor in different situations, it can kind of keep it a little bit more consistent. But really, you just kind of have to hope for the best.
So really. It could be like environmental or whatever.
It could be. It could just be a crappy old monitor.
Yeah. I know like older Mac, like OS X, OS X, I think people get semantic about, used to have a 1 point or a 2.2 gamma, and it's everything else uses 1.8. But so now PCs and Macs should be the latest if you're on the latest version of the software.
Yes.
So that I know that changed. Eric, I don't know if he's got like a really old monitor, but I know reds and oranges seem to be the worst in my experience, right?
Yeah, they are pretty bad. They can look completely oversaturated on certain monitors. So I have this Wacom Cintiq, you know, that big massive tablet display. It's not just I have one of those, and
cool.
I'm not gonna lie, I don't like it.
Oh, really?
I don't like it because it's great if you're going to be doing a lot of illustration, a lot of printing, because mm-hmm. you can really fine tune it in Photoshop and all these different, you know, Corel Painter or whatever. But if you try to browse the web on it, it is an absolute disaster.
And just how
and
it
there's
looks?
Really no, it's everything is completely oversaturated and there really is no way to fix it because it's meant really to be kind of used in applications that have a lot of calibration and you can actually make color profiles and stuff. So in different browsers and stuff, when they handle color profiles differently, you don't have that level of control over it. So I'm still kind of doing a little bit of research on if there is a way to fix it, but I haven't found anything yet. And if anybody knows, then I would love to know about it.
Yeah, because you probably spent a few bucks on that thing.
It was a few bucks and
at least 2 pounds.
It was at least 2 pounds. But the actual problem is that I had to order it from Toronto because there are limited places that sell this type of display, because it's really meant for like high-end professional sort of illustrators and whatever.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's something that I wanted for a long time, and I thought that it'd be fantastic, but I don't like it. I don't use it very bummer. Much.
So, I guess back to the accessibility question, like, is there like, have you seen problems with this, or do you know like where somebody like was like, oh, I think this is great, you know, maybe they had the wrong color profile on their images or something, and it just ends up wiping out the accessibility on a site? Or
I haven't really come across that. To be honest, using that monitor, I don't go on the web. The only thing I use it for now is for testing media queries in the most absolute widest size, because it's so large. But in terms of accessibility, I mean, I imagine it would cause problems. But again, like, if you're going to be using it in Photoshop and whatever applications where you can have better control over the color, it's different. I just find on the web, it's an absolute disaster. So if you do a lot of web work, I wouldn't get it. But if you do a lot of traditional digital painting, that sort of thing, then it's more worth the money. I know that they're coming out with a new one soon. I think August 20th, they're having some kind of a new product launch. So I'm kind of hoping they'll fix it, but I don't think I'm actually going to spend any more money.
Yeah.
To get a new one.
So
I'm just used to my own workflow now, and I just use a regular Intuos tablet. Like, I don't actually draw on the screen or anything, but it's what I've been using for years, and it does the job, so I'm happy.
I do the cinema display thing, and I think it looks pretty good. And then if I'm working on it and if something looks good, and then I go to some crappy monitor and it looks crappy there, normally I'm like, yeah, it looks crappy, but so does everything else. You know, it doesn't look uniquely crappy just to this design. That's why I feel like these questions are hard to answer. I'm like, did something happen that just your website looks amazingly bad on this bad monitor? Or are you just bummed out because you're close to your design and you know what it looks like? But in actuality, every website looks a little busted up and gross.
Yeah.
it's just going to vary from monitor to monitor. And you really don't know. I mean, you could have somebody viewing it on a black and white Kindle, you know? Like, you really don't know what people are going to look at your website with.
Indeed.
So try to get it to what you feel is acceptable, and try not to compare it. It's the same thing. Like, nobody's going to look at your website side by side, unless you're a developer. But, like, your mom is not going to look at your website in different browsers and be like, that does not have rounded corners. you know,
that's
like
a classic issue of that. I think we've kind of all agreed on that one over time. I think it, thank God.
Yeah.
I would say last point for me is like the like color ratio stuff, which you find out about in Jerry's book, but like the accessible colors have like specific ratios they have to meet in contrast and stuff like that. So, and those are sort of designed to be pretty tolerant to all these varying displays and stuff. So
exactly. If you follow some of those contrast ratios, if your colors and your contrast will meet that, then in terms of accessibility, you're covered.
Yeah.
So that's a good kind of general rule to follow.
Cool. Awesome.
We got one from I think we covered that one here, which is kind of interesting. Yep. Phil asks, I am a growing web designer that's started learning the nuts and bolts of the web about a year ago. I really enjoy the coding aspects of the web, can hold my own HTML, CSS. I know a bit of jQuery, PHP. I have always struggled with creating my own design elements. With the growing number of tools, CSS3, yada, 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 I can make stuff, you know, gradients, drop shadows, buttons, and stuff. I know my way around and I'm halfway decent and can do layouts, but I haven't been able to spend the time to learn how to make it doesn't feel like a really good designer yet. I was wondering what your thoughts are on using kind of prefab design elements from stuff like DesignShock.com and the slew of others that offer freebies or commercial license purchases. A lot of them seem to be really high quality images, high quality components, better than anything I could produce. Is there any shame in incorporating these types of elements into web pages rather than trying to make my own?
I don't think so. As long as you're using it legally. You know, it's not like you're just going to rip it off of Google Images and put it in there and call it your own. Yeah. But, you know, I'm sure, like, I've used stock photography. I mean, it's almost the same. Like, I've used stock photography. I have used some stock things in the past as elements of design. I wouldn't use, like, an entire thing. But if you're learning, if you feel like it's going to help you out and it is legal, you know, go for it. If you're doing it for clients and they feel happy with it, you're not really causing any harm, right? So in terms of becoming a better designer, you know, just if it kind of sounds like he still might want to get to that point eventually. Yeah. So I just strip it back, you know, just start with a sketchbook. Because mm-hmm. you can do so much more on paper. And I always say this, the more you do on paper, the less time you're going to waste. Because when you sit down in front of the computer, you have every pretty much option in the world. And you get kind of caught up in looking at elements. And you're like, well, I'm just going to make a button for half an hour. But overall, I just find it easier to sketch everything and nail that down. And when you nail that down, you kind of have a better idea. And you might not want to go and just pull elements from some kind of a stock website. So that's... Yeah.
It would be weirder to start with one of these things. I just went to Design Chalk to check it out, and there's lots of like UI sets kind of thing. And one of them is, I don't know, it seems laughable to me, but it's like wooden UI parts. So it's like radio buttons and search boxes and date pickers and stuff that look like wood. You know,
it's awesome.
It actually does look kind of awesome when you look at it all together. But like, in what website in the world would like a wooden date picker be the right choice? You know.
Yeah, I definitely would not start there. I feel like a lot of people might be tempted to just look and be like, yeah, I kind of like that, so I'm going to make my website look like wood. But, you know, you still have to design your website. It has to be a purpose behind it. It has to look that way for a reason. So if you do happen to find something that fits with your idea, then sure, go for it. But I wouldn't go there kind of looking for ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like cost-benefit analysis, too. You know, again, it's like, as long as it's legal, you know, but like,
yeah.
does the flat-style GUI PSD for $30 get you like 98% of the way there for your client? Like,
right.
Does it? Then maybe that's awesome, and you're going to make a freaking killing, you know. There's like the chance goes up if you're buying these kits that somebody else also bought this kit and made a site similar to your client's site that is either better or worse. And that could put you in an awkward position.
And that's an issue I have a lot with stock photography, especially. And sometimes you kind of have to use it because sometimes your client just absolutely does not have the budget for a full production photo shoot. But
Even for like their own headshots, they're like, I'd rather have the lady laughing.
Yeah,
at the
that is
sky.
Not okay. That's not okay. That is not okay. It's never okay.
Good. I like it when we have actual advice.
Yeah, but that's another thing. Like, again, like you just have to be careful because you don't know who else is using that stuff, and then it's not going to be yours anymore. It's going to be, well, my website has these wooden buttons, which are also used on this person's website. And I try to steer away from it. Like, I definitely try to do all my own stuff for sure.
Yeah. And maybe this is just a step on the journey towards doing your own stuff, too. I'd hate to, you know, somebody needs to buy a little UI kit and that it's fun for them and they get something done out of it. Yeah. And then the next time they build their own, that's a good step. So
it's not going to happen overnight. Like, it takes a while. You know, you're going to improve over time.
Indeed. Speaking of improving, one way that you could do that would be to like attend a really good conference, wouldn't you say? That would be a good way to do that. The 2013
Tell
CSS
me more.
Dev Conference is coming up. This is in the Stanley Hotel, which is the hotel that The Shining was shot inside of, which is super rad, near the Rocky Mountains in the Colorado in the U.S. here. And it's coming up October 21st through 23rd. The CSS Dev Conference is going to be there. And I know we've mentioned this on the show before, but you should go to the website now because they totally updated the website with all the speakers and stuff. So now, finally, the reveal of the full speaker schedule is going
like
to be there.
Speakers and sessions, I think, got picked.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, absolutely. And some, you know, some classic good names here and some fresh names as well. Actually, it looks about like, I don't know, 2/3 people I've never heard before, which to me makes me want to go to these things because I like both. I like hearing from people that I know are going to blow my mind because they always do. And then people that who have fresh voices I've never heard before. So as they're always knocking it out and doing a good job there. Go to the website and look at the pictures of the place, too. I feel like this is kind of a take the family kind of thing because you might have a good time just kind of being amongst the beautiful mountains there and such.
It looks good. Yeah, these speakers are awesome. These topics, people I've never even heard of. Like there's like newcomers. I like it. That's cool. That's what he does, like a double blind selection. So it's like people choose the topics they're interested in. Pretty
look
awesome.
This. Scott Kellum, so, Color Meet Code. What's that going to be about? I don't know. You might have to buy a ticket and find out.
All right, let's continue on. Want to get this one because it is for Jerry. From Ian McDonald, E-Ann pronounced. Hello, Jerry. As much as we haven't met in person, you seem like a very happy person on Twitter and elsewhere. In an industry that can be dramatic, cynical, and sometimes barbaric, how do you remain positive and keep your head up in what you do?
Oh, I don't know. I think I ask myself that sometimes too. I just try not to let things get to me too much. I used to be a lot more confrontational on the internet when I was younger, and it just wasn't worth it. I just could not deal with it, and I hated it because I'm not really that type of person. So I try not to get involved in like arguments and drama and all that kind of thing. Just
actively avoid it.
I try to actively avoid it unless it's absolutely something that I get pulled into, but I just rather spend my time being more productive, trying to find solutions for stuff and
that's a good sense.
Taking care of myself and, you know, just having fun because there's a lot of drama, obviously, in the industry all the time, every day, it seems like. So, yeah, I just try to do my own thing, and I think it's working.
So, Jerry, I heard that you told somebody who told somebody who told Matt who told Ethan that you think Zeldman's overweight. Would you like to respond to that? I'm just kidding.
Ouch. Silence.
I wish that I had half of the determination that he had, and he is doing such an incredible job at taking care of himself.
Look at that positivity. Now, I only mentioned Jeffrey because I know he's actively busting it. He's doing really good.
Which is interesting because my next pastry box article thing that I'm writing is actually about that stuff, which is very kind of a coincidence. So that's coming out later this week. I'm not actually finished writing it yet, but it's going to be about like taking care of yourself and not sitting in your seat and coding all day and thinking that you're going to be successful. Because, you know, as not just freelancers, but I mean people who go to jobs at agencies and then come home and also work crazy hours at freelance, you know, you're kind of killing yourself, even if you don't realize it. So,
yeah,
it's good. You need to get off the computer more, and it's really important. So that's what I'm kind of writing about right now.
That's nice. I
went to the chiropractor recently. He's a beautiful man. He looks like John Hamm, and he literally like hugs you until your bones crush. You know, it's awesome. But dude, I was so messed up. Like my shoulder, I couldn't even throw a ball. Like because of my mouse hand or whatever. So it's like, yeah, our bodies take this weird, like, I don't know, crumpling. We're all slowly, like, getting, I don't know, kind of more decrepit. So
yeah, like we can't keep it up forever. Yeah. Really, you know, and I've wanted to go to a massage therapist a few times because I have had just some really tightness and muscles and stuff, but I haven't really done that yet, but just trying to take care of myself in other ways.
You know what I might say is that it may be a harder choice in life to how your own brain reacts to some drama. Let's say you hear about something and it pisses you off or whatever. It may be hard to change your personal reaction to that, but it's an easier thing to change what you're choosing to then tweet about or share on Facebook or whatever. So like exactly. You can be mad if you want, but could you chill on the bummer tweets? So that's me too, I get mad about stuff too. And I'm really, really actively trying to then shut up about it on Twitter or just not, you know, or whatever. I don't know.
It also helps to have a private Twitter account. That's really good to have.
A little coping mechanism.
I may or may not have a few of those.
We should talk offline.
I may or may not have a private Twitter account.
That's interesting too. I feel like lately I was talking with Chris about this before the show, but like GitHub stuff is weird too. Like, I feel like if people could just watch their tone, like that would just change the world, you know, just like, cause people are like so confrontational. I got a commit on a repo recently. It was like, I'm sad this project's dead. And it's like, cause he like sent a commit on Saturday morning. And I was like, I was just like, I can't respond to this right now. So I'm not working. So anyway.
Yeah. I think I have gotten better at just controlling like how I react to stuff. I mean, I'm still probably pretty mad about stuff. I just try not to show it publicly.
Yeah. Cause if you show it publicly, like you kind of feed the system, right? Rage.
Exactly. I mean, obviously there are things that are completely worth speaking up about, which I will do, but you know, for petty things.
If it's a big world changing issue, maybe voicing your opinion is better than not. But if it's like some company increased their prices on WordPress themes, maybe that's a good opportunity to shut up. Okay. I said I wasn't going to say anything about that.
Chris, you're outing yourself. Okay. Dude. Oh, all right. That was a bit of a secret. That's Chris's secret.
No,
all right. Next question. Let's do this one from Shala. Writes in, I'm relatively young and only graduated with a BFA in graphic design 5 years ago. Since then, I've been a print designer for several companies, both on-site and freelance. At the moment, I'm stuck in a dead-end corporate production job. Sorry, we said your last name. With no hope for web training. This makes me nervous because most are aware, print seems to be dying. I want to be employable after this job because who knows? The next job may require being fluent in both web and print. I'm considering quitting this job. I have plenty of savings. Sorry, we said the last name. I apologize. And take the next few months to take as many web design as courses as possible from a local university plus online sites like Treehouse. Once I've figured I'm well versed in web, I'd be able to land another job, perhaps one that pays even better. I hope so. In the meantime, I'll freelance. So am I stupid to quit my full-time corporate print design job, or is this exactly the kind of shakeup my career needs? Quit or not quit? Jerry.
Well, I think you know what I would say. Well, that's pretty much what I did.
Yeah.
It is pretty much. But I didn't really do any courses. It's one thing I did not do. I read more books and I just taught myself through learning. Now, I mean, I did start out in web design at first. That was the thing that I always sort of wanted to do. But I kind of did it as a hobby, like, back in, I think, 1999 was the first time I made a website, which was terrible, but not really the point. But it is something that you can learn on your own. And I think it's important to kind of think about how much money you want to spend on courses, because it is something that you can do yourself. And I know a lot of people do need some guidance, and some people might feel like they need courses to keep on track, but it is something that you can do, so if, especially if you're disciplined. But yeah, the more you can learn on your own and the more freelance jobs you can pick up here and there, it's going to help you. And it took me a long time to build up enough confidence to do it, but you will get to the point where you kind of know that you're ready. But then again, other people are probably more brave than I am. So sometimes, you know, you just go for it, mm-hmm. even if you're scared.
Yeah.
And I find that I know some people who have actually quit on a complete whim with no plan and absolutely no real idea of what they were going to do. But I found that those people actually ended up working twice as hard because they didn't have a job to go to, and they had all the free time in the world. So they could actually go out and spend their entire day figuring out their plan. And if this person said that they had savings, and that's one of the most important things. So if you've got something to rely on, that is an option. So it kind of depends on how brave you are, really.
I feel like if you're the type of person who's writing into a talk show about wondering if your career needs a shakeup, your career probably needs a shakeup.
You probably do. Yeah. That's a sign.
Yeah, that's a good sign. I think do it. If you have savings, like, and it doesn't sound like you have kids or, you know,
just that's one, yeah.
mega dependence, yeah. and that only gets harder when you're later in life, you know, so, you know, don't shake up.
That's true. The longer you wait, the more difficult it is to do.
Yeah, because sure. then you have like a house and a mortgage and blah, blah, blah. And like, it just, yeah, don't, it sucks later. So do it now if you can do it. So
exactly.
And I think, you know, the Treehouse and Code Academy and Code School and all those guys, they're awesome. There's never been and CSS Tricks, right, Chris? But there's never been like a better time to learn the web. I mean, it's so good right now. And like Treehouse, apparently they're not paying for this. I should charge them. We'll invoice them. But they like even try to get you a job. Like they connect with employers. Like that's part of their mission, is like to get people who go through their courses jobs. So there you go. I mean, maybe that's.
Yeah. There's a lot more options out there than doing university courses. Put it mm-hmm. that way. I'm not a massive fan of learning web design through universities or colleges. Online stuff is fantastic. I feel like it's more trustworthy, like places like Treehouse and Code Academy and all these kinds of things. It's easy. It's easy to access it. It's easy to do it at your own pace.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to hope that your instructor is going to be good. You know, so
yeah,
there's a lot of things that I've had some issues with when it comes to education and web design. So I really like the online options that are available these days. It's really starting to change around.
Yeah, me too. It's a good way to learn because you're at a computer, which is the thing that you need to build websites, you know.
Yep. And just build it. Just, you know, you'll learn
by
doing.
Can I get a just build websites?
Oh, yeah, here we go. Ready?
Just build websites!
There it is. Best sound effect ever.
Hey. That was so good.
All right. Well, cool. Well, I'm afraid it's that time where we might have to wrap up the show here. But Jerry, thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. How can people follow you, tweet you, buy your book? How does that work?
You can follow me. I'm pretty much Hello Jerry with one R everywhere. You can come see me. I'm speaking at a couple of conferences soon. I'm speaking at Reasons to be Creative in Brighton in early September. And I'm speaking at Future Web Design in New York in October.
Oh, awesome.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my website is hellojerry.com, and there's a link there to buy my book.
There you go.
I did the last Future Web Design there, and you get to stay in a fancy hotel. It's all, like, fancy purple. And
is it the Yotel?
Yeah, totally.
I'm so excited to stay there.
Yeah, it's fancy. There's, like, a big robot arm thing that, like, puts your bags away.
It's owned by a guy who opened Yo Sushi in the United Kingdom.
Oh, cool.
Oh.
Mm.
I was thinking it was, like, yogurt-themed. Who knows with those fancy New York types. Is it New York? I just inferred that. Anyway.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, cool. Well, thanks again so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. Thanks, chat room. You guys are good. So really, really appreciate you guys giving us facts. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at ShepTech Show. Yeah, Chris, you got anything else?
ShepTalkShow.com.